Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Home First Finance Company India Limited Q4 and FY25 earnings conference call. As a reminder, all participants' lines will be in listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Deepak Khetan, Head Investor Relations of Home First Finance Company India Limited. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Sejal. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Home First Finance Company's earnings conference call to discuss the financial results for the quarter and financial year ended March 31st, 2025. We hope you have had the chance to review our investor presentation and press release, both of which are available on our website and the stock exchanges. Additionally, we have uploaded an Excel fact sheet containing historical data on our website for your easy reference. From the management today, we have Mr. Manoj Viswanathan, Managing Director and Chief Executive Officer, Ms. Nutan Gaba Patwari, Chief Financial Officer. With that, I now invite Mr. Manoj Viswanathan to share his insight on our overall performance. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, Deepak. Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us today. Before diving into our business performance, I would like to touch upon a significant strategic milestone that we recently achieved. During our previous call, we mentioned about the enabling resolution by the board to raise fresh equity. In April 2025, we successfully raised 1,250 crores through a qualified institutional placement, issuing 1.3 crore equity shares to marquee institutional investors, details of which are available on our website and exchanges. The overwhelming response to our QIP reflects the market's strong confidence in our vision, business model, and execution capability. This capital infusion will enable us to accelerate network expansion, enhance operational capabilities, and seize emerging opportunities in the affordable housing space. Coming back to the business, we are absolutely delighted to share that FY25 has been another year of strong and consistent performance for Home First, marked by robust growth, operational excellence, and strategic execution. Let me walk you through some highlights. Our assets under management grew to 12,713 crores, registering a 31.1% year-on-year and 6.4% quarter-on-quarter increase, while delivering a PAT of 382 crores, with an ROE of 16.5% for the full year 2025. We touched an ROE of 17% in quarter four FY25. Our disbursements for FY25 stood at 4,805 crores, up 21.2% year-on-year, in line with our guidance for the year. For the quarter, disbursements grew notably, increasing by 6.7% quarter-on-quarter. Business growth is driven by expansion and distribution strength in large affordable housing markets. During the fiscal 2025, we further expanded our network, adding 40 touchpoints, including 22 branches. This added our reach to 10 more districts within our 13 states and union territory. As of March 2025, our total touchpoints stand at 361, with 155 branches. As we expand our operations, we also added a net of 385 employees during the fiscal 2025, taking the total employee strength to 1,634. Importantly, despite the continued rise in the MCLR of banks, we were able to leverage our strong balance sheet and well-diversified borrowing mix to maintain a competitive cost of borrowing, ex-co-lending, of 8.4% for the fiscal 2025. Our borrowing stood at 9,551 crores as of March 2025, and we are carrying a solid liquidity buffer of rupees 2,468 crores. Our asset quality remains resilient, with sequential improvement in early delinquencies. One plus DPD improved to 4.5%, which is a decline of 30 basis points on a quarter-on-quarter basis. 30+ DPD improved to 3.3%, and it's a decline of 10 basis points on a quarter-on-quarter basis. Gross Stage 3 assets remain stable at 1.7%. Our credit costs continue to be contained at around 30 basis points. We maintain our conservative annual credit cost guidance of 30-40 basis points. Now, turning to technology, which continues to give us a competitive edge. Today, 75% of our sanctions are being facilitated via the Account Aggregator framework. 80% of our loans are digitally fulfilled through e-agreements and e-NACH mandates. And 96% of our customers are registered on our mobile app, with 88% of service requests now raised digitally. On the regulatory front, the environment continues to be supportive, with two back-to-back rate cuts of 25 basis points each by the RBI and clear policy focus on promoting liquidity, growth, and governance. The conditions are right for strong momentum in housing demand. Finally, I'm thrilled to share that our ESG journey is accelerating. We expanded our Green Home Initiative during the year, with 120 homes certified as of March 2025. Our ESG efforts are being acknowledged and appreciated by independent global agencies in the form of high ESG scores, 46 by S&P Global for 2024 and 16.2 by Morningstar Sustainalytics, indicating low risk. All in all, it has been another exciting year. India's housing story is only getting started, and Home First is uniquely positioned to lead this transformation. With that, I now hand it over to Ms. Nutan Gaba Patwari to take you through the financials in a little more detail. Over to you, Nutan.
Thank you, Manoj. Good afternoon, everyone. Let us start with the key financial metrics. Total income for the year stood at 1,539 crores, up 33.1% year-on-year, and our profit after tax increased by 25% to 382 crores. This translates into a very healthy return on assets of 3.5% and ROE of 16.5%. For the quarter, we crossed 100 crores mark in profit as we posted a net profit of 105 crores with ROE of 17%, demonstrating that even as we grow, we continue to deliver strong profitability. Spreads for Q4 FY25, our spread excluding co-lending is at 5.1%. Our cost of borrowing excluding co-lending maintained at 8.4%. Net interest margin for Q4 was at 5.1%. It expanded by 20 basis points on a QOQ basis, driven largely by better liquidity management. Operating expenses to assets was at 2.7% for the quarter, in line with our expectations. Moving to provisions and asset quality, credit cost for Q4 and for the year stood at 30 basis points. We continue to maintain our conservative medium-term credit cost guidance of 30 to 40 basis points. We continue to adopt a conservative approach to provisioning, maintaining a provision overlay above ECL requirements. As of March 25, our total provision coverage ratio is 46.6% as against 50.9% as of March 24. Moving to balance sheet and capital position, our balance sheet remains robust, providing a solid foundation to support the company's growth plans. Our borrowing profile continues to be well-diversified and cost-effective, reflecting our prudent financial management. 60% of borrowing comes from public and private sector banks, 16% from NHB, 17% from assignment and co-lending, and balance from NCDs, ECBs, and NBFC. As part of our liquidity management strategy, we executed a direct assignment transaction worth 230 crores during the quarter. We continue to focus on co-lending business and are looking to scale with newer partners. We aim to take co-lending contribution to 10% of disbursements as we scale. Our cost of borrowing is competitive at 8.4%, enabling us to maintain our spreads. Our current rating is AA- from leading rating agencies. Coming to capital adequacy and liquidity, as of March 25, prior to April QIP, our capital adequacy stands at 32.8%, with Tier 1 at 32.4%. As at the end of fiscal year 25, our net worth stands at 2521 crores, with book value of 280 rupees, reflecting a strong capital position. The capital position looks very robust post the QIP. I would like to highlight some pro forma key numbers. Given our enlarged equity base, post the capital infusion, our pro forma leverage has come down to 3.3 times. Pro forma capital adequacy post capital raise will be 51% and a net worth of 3,751 crores. To summarize, our financial position is extremely strong, our balance sheet is well capitalized, and we are sharply focused on scaling profitability while maintaining high asset quality. With that, we conclude our opening remarks and now happy to take your questions.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and 1 on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and 2. Participants are requested to use handset while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Renish from ICICI Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi. Congrats on a great set of numbers, Manoj and Nutan, and also congrats for a successful QIP. Just two things. One on the spread side, right? So when we look at the incremental spread at 4.7, and when we look at the last four quarters, trending spread is declining. So how confident we are that we'll be able to sustain this 5 to 5.25 of a medium-term range when it comes to spreads?
Renish, if you look at the book spreads, we are above the 5% mark, and we have always maintained that we run a fully floating rate book. So depending upon how the cost of borrowing is moving, we will transmit the difference to the customer. Of course, now we are kind of entering a declining interest rate position, so situation. So that is why we have not really, embarked on any increase in rate. So the trend should reverse and the margin should get maintained on the book. So that is how we are looking at it.
So basically, we don't foresee any pressure on spread from this level. I mean, is that the fair assumption? This is a lower end of the guidance at 5%.
Correct. So 5% plus we should be able to maintain, because it is, like I said, a floating rate book. So if we are going below 5%, we will transmit the difference to the customer.
Renish, just to be clear, the guidance is on spread excluding co-lending book.
Yeah, but that is only 10 basis points of difference, right?
Our expectation is that we will be able to hold on to the cost of borrowing moving ahead. So we are comfortable with that 5% plus guidance on the spread, excluding co-lending.
Got it. And just, hypothetical situation, let's say, if there is no rate cut cycle, I mean, how do you see the asset yield moving, just from a competitive perspective?
Asset yields, we largely hold in the 13.5% kind of a range. So 13 to 13.5, we normally maintain the asset yields. You're talking about the origination yields, incremental origination yields.
Yeah.
So we should be able to maintain it at that level.
Okay. And the LAP mix, how should it span out over the next couple of years?
LAP mix broadly in the 15 to 20% range. 15% is the current share of AUM, while share of disbursal is slightly higher, 16-17%. So that catch-up is something that we have already communicated that over the next 5 years, it can move up from 15 to 20%.
Okay. And lastly, on this, PCR on the stage 3, so last year we were close to 30, now we are close to 25. So how one should read this data point on the PCR?
So, Renish, it's essentially an outcome from the ECL model. So the only way to read is that the credit cost is improving and the resultant requirement of provisioning on the book is now kind of coming at around 25%.
Oh, and how often we refresh our ECL on annual basis?
Every year, yes. Every March we do the full activity of refresh. So we have just done this exercise in the last 2-3 months.
Okay. And just to clarify, on stage 1 we'll be using 12 months rolling database, right?
On stage 1 we use 12 months probability of default, but the database is used from business to date.
Okay. Got it. Okay, that's it from my side.
For additional comfort, Renish, we've just had new auditors this time as we know that auditors have to rotate every 3 years. So this is BSR's first audit and they have done a full detailed verification of the ECL model. And as you can see, there is no meaningful change to what we were doing in the past.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Abhijit Tibrewal from Motilal Oswal Financial Services Limited. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good evening, everyone. Congratulations on a good quarter. I'm just nitpicking. Just wanted to understand, bounce rates have inched up a little bit sequentially, though it came down again in April. Also, when we look at the asset quality, GS3 for last 7 quarters, being in that 1.7% range, I would admit we are seeing shades of this in other product segments as well, given how the economy was, right? So I'm just trying to understand, today, are there any customer segments, some cohorts or maybe geography-wise where you are seeing some stress and which is actually leading to this, or is it just pure weak macro which is leading us where we are today in terms of collections or asset quality?
No, so again, as we have well mentioned in the past, you know, can't read too much into the bounce rate because that is just data immediately after the first presentation, and a large percentage of customers actually make the payments immediately after the bounce. So if you see our early delinquencies, it is actually compressed this quarter. I mean, even in spite of the bounce rate being a little high last quarter, you can see that the early delinquencies have come down. The 1 plus delinquency has come down to 4.5%, so there's a 30 basis points reduction. And even 30 day past due has come down by 10 basis points. I would say that we are not seeing anything other than what you are seeing on the asset quality. There is nothing which we are reading from the ground level data that we are getting.
Got it. So basically bounce is more like some behavior change that has happened in customers, and which is where maybe they bounce when the MASH mandate is presented, but pay up later when we follow.
That's right.
Correct, correct.
Got it. Thank you. The second question that I had was for Nutan, more on the cost of borrowing trajectory in this upcoming financial year. Let's say with a 75 to 100 basis points cumulative rate cut, I mean, what is the benefit that we are going to see in our cost of borrowings? The related question here again is, now that we've already seen 50 basis points, have there been any changes in our PLR? And I mean, lastly, how are we thinking about margins now in this year?
So, Abhijit, I'll try to go in the sequential order. So, assuming a 100 basis points cumulative rate cut, what we have observed generally is that there is a 60% transmission if we take a very long-term 10-year data. But the transmission takes about 12 months to happen. By now 50 basis points have happened, another 50 basis points in this conversation. So about 60 basis points, but it will take cumulatively 12 months to come through on the bank borrowing part of it. Logically speaking, it should also happen on the repo book and other EBLR book as well. So that is the answer to your first question. PLR, no changes have been made. What benefit has come through thus far is that, if you remember, our projection was 850 for quarter of four. We've been able to hold it at 840. So we've been able to actually hold the cost of borrowing flat for now three quarters, despite the MCLR creep up, because, you know, there are some shorter tenor linked lines which are getting repriced downwards. Moving to margins, I think before margins, spreads are important. Spreads is going to be in that 5 to 520 range that we have guided just now. Margins is an outcome of equity because we've just had an equity raise. The margins will expand for, let's say, next few quarters. And again, as leverage starts to pick up 6-8 quarters out, we will see a compression on margins. So the right number would be to look at spreads of 5 plus.
Got it. And then the last question I had here is, I mean, now that the equity raise is complete, are we at least thinking about engaging with the credit rating agencies once again? So that's for you, Nutan. And lastly, again, for Manoj, I mean, from what we picked up from other housing finance companies during this quarter is maybe in the month of March, the PSU banks were a little aggressive in mortgages, but we've not really seen that kind of a competitive intensity from the private banks just yet. So if you could just briefly give some color on how the competitive intensity is. Thank you.
So credit rating agencies, yes, we have started doing some work because the results have just got signed yesterday. We are hopeful that in the next few months we should be, let's put a 6-month timeline to this, that we should be able to see initial signs of a credit rating upgrade. From my conversation with the banks, you're right, private sector banks are not so focused today on mortgage. In fact, there's a significant sell down of book from their side on the secured side. From a more on-ground market feedback, I'll just hand over to Manoj to walk you through.
Yeah, so on-ground feedback, news in the market is that, yes, the private banks are slightly less excited about mortgage, but there is more activity amongst the nationalized banks. And, of course, the larger HFCs are also quite active.
Got it. This is all from my side. Thank you for taking my questions. And I wish Manoj and Nitin, you and your team the very best. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Raghav Garg from Ambit Capital. Please go ahead.
Hey, hi. Thanks for the opportunity and congrats on the quarter and capital raise. I have three questions. So one is on the employee part, you hired a lot of people in FY25, the employee base is up some 31%. This is highest growth in any of the last 4 or 5 years. What are your hiring plans for F26? Will you continue at this rate or will the hiring tone down materially, say, compared to a 31% growth rate in FY25? Let me also ask my second question, which is sort of connected to the first one. Historically, you've not seen such a dip in 4Q employee base. This time it was around 4% lower quarter on quarter. And I understand that employee attrition has been a challenge for the sector in general. So in this backdrop, how was attrition in F25 and what do you expect for F26 on the attrition part? Thanks. And I have a third question which I can ask later.
No problem, Raghav. So on the employee part, yes, in absolute terms, the increase has been close to 400 employees. This is representative of our branch growth and our overall scale. The right way to calculate and forecast this will be about 10 to 11 employees per branch at an organization level. Actuals will actually be split between head office and branch, but from a modeling perspective, 10 to 11 employees per branch is what you should look at. Attrition for last year is 30%. It will be disclosed in an annual report, which we will publish shortly. Year on year, attrition has come down by almost 2 to 3%. So those were your two questions.
Yeah, I think he was looking at basically quarter four over quarter three and why the number of employees has gone down. So that is largely because, you know, the hiring gets bunched up, so quarter one, there would be a large influx of employees. Quarter four, normally there is no influx of, additional employees because we do campus hiring. So the campus season kind of, the hiring season ends in March and then people start joining from April. So the number of people joining in the last quarter is a little less. So basically the attrition catches up and there is a reduction in employee base in the last quarter.
And you expect that attrition would continue to come down even in FY26, right? That's the expectation right now?
Attrition coming down because between 24 and 25 attrition movement is just 2-3 percentage points. So broadly, we think the attrition in this segment remains at this level only. So 25 to 30% attrition is something that is kind of par for the course in our business.
Understood. Fair enough. The third question is, so I was just doing some numbers and whatever hiring.
Sorry to interrupt, sir. Your audio is not clear. I would request you to please use your handset.
Is it better now?
Yes, sir. Please continue.
Okay. So I was saying that, if you look at some of the data points that you provide, then it appears that the file productivity has come down at F25, obviously because of such hiring, which indicates that it's more of a denominator effect. Do you expect that this employee productivity will go up substantially? And if yes, can you give a number, say 5%, 10%, or 15% increase over F25? Or do you think that the productivity gains will be very limited given that you're already best in the industry?
I would not project too much increase or decrease in the productivity. So those would be largely, like I said, quarterly movements depending upon addition of new employees, etc. So when there's a large influx of new employees, the productivity drops a little bit. But broadly, it will be range bound. We can't expect a substantial improvement in productivity.
Understood. So whatever run rate that was there for F25 is maybe a marginal improvement over that, not more than 3%. Is that something that we can assume?
Yeah, broadly in the same range, you can say last 2 years, you can average productivity is what we will be able to maintain.
Okay. That's all from my side. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Rajiv Mehta from Yes Securities. Please go ahead.
Hey, hi. Congrats on a strong result in the QIP. So my question, first question is on two markets, I mean, Tamil Nadu and MP. So as I see in the last three, 4 quarters, the growth in Tamil Nadu on a sequential basis has been coming off. And we've not been adding much branches also in that particular market. Contrary, I think they're growing very fast in MP, you know, in the last 2 years, and they're adding a lot of distribution out there. So just to understand, you know, these two trends in...
Hello.
Rajiv.
Hello.
Mr. Rajiv, we can't hear you. I would request you to please use your handset.
I think his call is disconnected.
Yes, sir. We'll move on to the next question. The next question is from the line of Mona Ketan from Dolat Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening and thanks for picking up my question.
Ma'am, I would request you to please use your handset.
Am I audible?
Yes, ma'am. Please continue.
Yeah. So firstly, was there any element of recovery from written-off this quarter? Because I see that the net write-offs are higher and yet credit cost is low. So just...
Yeah, very minimal, not significant, Mona.
Okay. And just on the co-lending business, wanted to understand if it is ROA accretive and, you know, given that the yields are a tad lower than the overall portfolio yields, where is the accretion coming in the P&L, if you could throw some light there, or is it more like a volume business?
So the co-lending structure is ROE accretive because we are able to move away the assets from the balance sheet. So that is the main reason why it becomes ROE accretive because, like I just mentioned, in the P&L, it appears in the interest income line and the interest expense line, unlike assignment, if that's your question.
Right. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
So ROE-wise, it may be a little diluted, but it's ROE accretive because you use less capital.
Absolutely, yes.
Got it. And just finally on the OPEX to assets, so we did see some improvement last fiscal and OPEX to assets seem to be at the lower end of your guidance at this point or for the full year FY25. So any color on the trajectory as we go ahead?
Broadly in the same line, the OPEX has a significant contribution of employee cost and we are assuming the productivity in similar levels. We just touched upon that. So operating cost to assets, we will also want to keep in this 2.7-2.8 range.
Got it.
We are more focused on growth for the next few years now.
Sure, got it.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Nidesh from Investec. Please go ahead.
Thanks for the opportunity. First question is on growth for next year. What is the target of disbursement growth that we are targeting in FY26 and how do you plan that in terms of new branch addition as well as growth from the existing branches?
Yeah, disbursement growth we are targeting around 20% plus. So somewhere in the 20 to 25% range is what we are looking at for disbursement growth. The trend will be similar, about 20-25% will come from new locations, branches, expansion, distribution and 75% will continue to come from existing branches.
Okay, sure. Second is on co-lending, so there have been draft guidelines from the regulator. Do you see any adverse impact of these guidelines on us?
Adverse impact... I think, you know, one thing that we are watching out for is basically the, you know, they have not mentioned the modus operandi of how this, you know, assets will get transferred. I mean, till now we were following the co-lending model too, but the draft guidelines do not have mention of that, co-lending model too. So I think that is our only kind of... you know, thing that we are watching out for. Because if the co-lending model 2 is not allowed, then how the assets will get transferred to the bank is something that we'll have to see. I mean, if it is as per model 1, then it is little tedious from a logistics perspective. Operationally, it is a little tedious. So we have to watch out for that.
Sure. And lastly, a data keeping question is active connectors as of March 25 and RM number of RMs as of March 25 and what percentage of disbursement has come from top 10 connectors?
Yeah, so total connectors active as of now is about 3,800 close to 3,800 connectors, active connectors. And number of relationship managers, that is sales team, would be about close to 1,200 salespeople.
And top 10 is below 4% addition.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Manoj and Nutan. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next follow-up question is from the line of Rajiv Mehta from Yes Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, I'm sorry about last time. I hope I'm audible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. Hi. Congrats on strong results in QIP. So my question is on Tamil Nadu. So if I were to calculate growth on sequential basis, there has been some moderation in the growth of Tamil Nadu market. And we also have not been adding many branches in the last few quarters out there. So how should we read this? Are we seeing any competitive pressure, pricing pressure out there, or any delinquency issue? The reverse question is for Madhya Pradesh, where we have been growing very fast and by adding a lot of branches. Is that market? Besides the opportunity, is that market behaving well in terms of early delinquency trends, and hence that is giving us confidence to grow out there?
Yeah, so as far as Tamil Nadu is concerned, we already have about 20 plus branches, about 24 branches there. So we are just kind of taking a step back and to see where we can expand, etc. And some leadership changes and those kind of a recalibration over there. In MP, you're right. Our initial calculations have gone right and we are able to expand and do well over there. So we are kind of investing more there. So these kind of, opportunistic movements will be there. There will be some states where we are kind of taking a step back, whereas in other places where we are expanding, etc. So this will continue. This will continue. I mean, it's not that we have kind of capped out in Tamil Nadu. We will, we are looking at making some changes and we'll come back stronger.
Okay. Okay. And Nutan, about this borrowing mix, when I look at from a lender's profile, so
yeah,
we have basically, reduced our dependence on private banks and increased our dependence on PSU banks pretty significantly over the last 7-8 quarters. How does it help us in a rate easing cycle? Does it help us in terms of, benchmarking of loans or negotiations, or if you can explain that?
So not so much specifically like that, Rajiv. It's largely driven by relationship depth, size. For example, one of the reasons I can call out for the public sector bank expansion in March quarter is a large line from SBI. And it just happens to be bunched up in a particular quarter. So that would, expand substantially. But if you, broadly, it's 30 plus minus 5% between either of the two pools.
But if I were to ask you that the borrowings from PSU banks, say the stock and even incremental, are they coming at a finer rate than private banks?
Yes. At par, I would say.
Okay.
That would be one of the key considerations for us to move ahead.
Got it. And just one clarification about this. So when you report collection efficiency and then you also give collection efficiency for unique customers,
mm-hmm.
So the difference will be your OD collections and NPL recovery, right?
No. It is basically number of collections over, so if the same customer, for example, makes two payments in the same month, okay, that will get counted in the first bar, the higher one. But in the other one, it will be counted as one.
Okay, so it can also be an advance and not just OD or...
No, we don't take advance. So it will be basically customers, for example, who are overdue by, let's say, 2 or 3 payments.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So OD collection and...
Yeah, so the
three... It can also be NPL recovery as well?
Yeah, overdue and NPAs, yes. So overdue and NPA recovery.
Correct. Okay. Yeah. Correct. Okay. Okay. Yeah. Got it. Thank you and best of luck. Yeah.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Anusha Raheja from Dalal & Broacha. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for taking my question. My question is basically working on the margin side only. Out of the total borrowing, 60% comes from bank borrowings. So if you can just tell us how much is repo rate linked or the MCLR rate linked. And secondly, our NHB drawdowns, if I'm not mistaken, is close to around 16% off. So how do we see this number in FY26, more drawdowns if it is expected? And thirdly, again on the margin side, the origination yield in Q4 is 13.3% versus 13.5% of your blended yield. So that's lower around by 20 basis points, what the blended average yield is. And on the borrowing side also, I think incremental marginal cost of borrowing is at 8.6% versus 8.4% blended cost of borrowing. So if you need to throw some light on all these things and how this could impact the margins. I understand that you said that you will be maintaining 5% plus, but if you can also throw some light on all these things.
Yeah, sure. So starting with the first question on the repo and the short-term link borrowing, that is about 18 to 19% that is already there. And I also mentioned to one of the previous questions that we've already started getting some benefit through that, and that is one of the primary reasons why we've been able to hold the cost of borrowing flat. Your second question was on NHB mix. NHB mix is about 16%. So NHB mix is in that range of 15 to 20%, which we feel is appropriate for the size of our company. We will continue to try to maintain in that particular range. On the last question that you had around yields, will be right now it's about 13.3%, and like we mentioned just a few minutes ago, the origination yield is range bound between 13 to 13.5, and we have a fully floating book. So if we have an origination yield in that range, and when we start seeing the cost of borrowing moving downwards, we have the flexibility to pass it on to the borrower. And that gives us the confidence why we will be able to maintain this 5% plus spread on an ex-co-lending basis.
Okay. And ma'am, you also mentioned the disbursements run rate of around 20 to 25%. Is that sufficient to maintain the AUM growth of 30%? So what is the broad assumption in the run out of the book that you would have assumed at this?
Runoff we have assumed is around 17 to 18%. So with the 20 to 25% disbursal growth, we should be able to get to about 26, 27 to about 30% in that range of AUM growth.
So in that 17, 18%, how much is the BT out rate?
BT out rate is about 7.5.
So I'm sorry, I did not understand. 17, 18% is the total rundown or 20, 25%?
17-18% is the total runoff.
It's a run. Okay. Okay, sir. Thanks.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Sanjay Jain from Aventis Capital. Please go ahead.
Hello. Yeah, thank you for taking my query. So my first question is on the AUM. So as for the future guidance by the management, the AUM was 20,000 CR for FY27. So how comfortable are we to achieve that in the next two quarters?
And
into financial years. And also, are there any hindrances or risks that we may be facing to achieve those numbers?
No, we are fairly confident of achieving the 20,000 mark in the next 2 years. We don't see any anything at this point. We don't see anything which is could be a hindrance to achieving the 20,000.
Okay, and could you give me any guidance on the 35,000 AUM as guided for FY30?
Yeah, so there again, we don't see anything that is seen as a major hindrance to reaching that number. Overall, we seem to be on track to achieving those numbers.
All right, sir. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Shreya Shivani from CLSA. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you for the opportunity and congratulations on everything. I just have only one of my questions is unanswered. It's again on the cost of funds. You have reduced the liquidity buffer this quarter, and also you mentioned 18-20% is your repo linkages, right? So shouldn't the cost of fund reduction, shouldn't that have been a little more? Or maybe if you can quantify the breakup of how much benefit came in from repo, how much came in from lower liquidity and how, or something like that, that will be a little useful.
No problem. So lower liquidity benefit will not come in the cost of borrowing line, it will come in the NIM line. So when we focus on the cost of borrowing line, essentially what we are talking about is just the repo linked. When we talk about repo, EBLR and short term, it also includes, for example, a 3-month T-bill. But a 3-month T-bill has not got repriced substantially. Then there is a repricing date. So everything has to be in order for that, for it to become effective. So what has become effective is broadly just the repo rate. So then, you know, you start slicing the 18% down to somewhere, let's say 10%. So that is why you see a significantly or rather flatter curve. Now, let's take a hypothetical situation. If this policy rate had not happened, then we would have been at 850. So the delta really is about 10 basis points, right? And we can look at a double decimal to come at that exact number. The second question which you had was around liquidity. So liquidity is now giving an effect in the net interest margin line. So net interest margin has improved from 490 to 510, largely contributed by liquidity. So I would say you can consider about half of it that has come through the liquidity line. And, you know, there are some other accounting entries that we have to take on mark-to-market transactions that form part of, you know, the borrowing cost. So those two have contributed to the expansion of NIM.
Got it. So of the 20 bips, 10 bips is just from the liquidity benefit that has flown into the margins, right? That broadly. Has there been a pickup in the cost of borrowing for any other lines that we have?
You mean
most? Yeah.
Yes. So whenever there is a historical, like a 6-month MCLR or a 12-month MCLR, because the bank MCLR has not come down yet, especially for public sector banks, as and when they are coming on the repricing date, they will increase. But if you're asking me from a marginal cost of borrowing, no. We have been able to maintain in the broad range of 840 to 860 and we are hopeful that, you know, now we should start improving on that starting this quarter.
Got it, got it. This is very useful. Thank you for explaining and all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Arvind from Sundaram Alternatives. Please go ahead.
Hello team, thank you so much for the opportunity and congratulations on the good set of numbers. So like this BT out rate has been going up for a few quarters now. Like is there any, like, you know, competition increasing, like what to read there? That is one, my first question. And the second question is on like the co-lending norms which came out. So like what do you like see like as the opportunities or like or the like you know all the headwinds or tailwinds, you know, from that to our existing co-lending model, like in terms of either for, you know, margin impact or for the growth opportunities, like whatever you like to, you know, call out in terms of, you know, very important takeaways from there. Yeah.
So on the BT out rate, it is largely range bound. So we normally see, you know, last two quarters it is slightly higher, first two quarters is slightly lower. So that kind of trend continued last year also. And so not much of a, I mean, if you actually see quarter four versus quarter four, it is a little lesser compared to last year quarter four. I mean, FY24 quarter four was 8.3%. This time it is 7.5%. So slightly lower the BT out rate is. So we expect it to be largely in that range bound between 6 to 8% only. And as far as co-lending was your second question, right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yeah, on co-lending, so new guidelines have been released, and we have to kind of wait and I think they are still under discussions. We have to wait and watch on certain areas it is definitely beneficial because now there is no ticket size cap on the co-lending part. So that is actually beneficial. And of course, as I mentioned earlier in the call, there is no mention of the co-lending model 2 in the draft guidelines. So that is something that we need to watch out for, because that co-lending model 2 is eliminated from co-lending, from the co-lending process, then it will make the co-lending process a little tedious. So that is a thing that we need to watch out for. But otherwise, the guidelines are beneficial in the sense that it expands the addressable market for us.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Pavan from Ratnatraya Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi team. Congrats on the results. I just wanted to understand the growth of this particular quarter has been pretty good. Actually, it has been much better than last 2 to 3 quarters. So what has changed in this quarter? And there seems to be a spike in disbursements, not only in Home First, but almost all the home finance lenders. So I just wanted to understand, is there any structural change or is this a seasonal kind of thing that happens in Q4?
So generally, Q4 is always a big quarter for all the companies. And I think it's the same trend that we are seeing this year also. In our case, generally Q4 is not such a big skew. There is no major skew in Q4. It's slightly better than the other quarters, but not there is no major skew. So the same trend continues for us as well. So that is broadly about it. So we were like we mentioned last quarter call also, that we are broadly on track to achieve the annual numbers. And so there was a slight increase in the Q4, and which helped us meet the annual numbers.
Okay. On the assignment book, do we have any targets on direct assignments per year, or how do we look at it overall?
Overall, largely, driven by liquidity need, relationship with the bank, pricing, some of those factors. No targets per se.
Okay. No targets per se, but broadly it's range bound if you see as a percentage of AUM.
Yeah.
Okay. And last question on the leverage side, now since we have raised money, how do we think about the leverage in, let's say, 2 years ahead? What is the kind of leverage we would like to operate on? Yeah.
See, right now, immediately after the fundraise, we are at 3.3. We can easily go up to 5+. So we are good for 4 years thereabouts.
Okay. So you are saying until next 4 years, you might not need to raise again.
That's right. See, because right now we will have a optical reduction in ROEs, and eventually that will also start catching up. So then equity will start accruing, and that will also further support the growth on the AUM. So FY30, probably until that we are good. Unless, of course, we grow faster than our projections, then it's another story.
Okay. And as per your projections, when we get back to the ROE of, let's say, around 16-17% that we currently have?
So our first milestone is to get to 15+, which is in about 6 to 7 quarters from now.
Okay. Yeah. Got it. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Ravi Naredi from Naredi Investments. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much. Manojji, you are really doing great. My question to Gabaji, our borrowing rates are 8.4%, which is higher than other reputed NBFC. They borrowed at 7.2 to 7.4. Why you pay higher rate? This rate of interest came down to us in 7.2% in financial year 22. But again, it has risen.
Yes, sir. Sir, I think the larger NBFCs that you're comparing us with will be likes of Bajaj and PNB Housing. and perhaps some of the other names, sir, their credit rating is AAA. We are a professionally set up entity. Our credit rating is AA-, and the big difference is scale. Sir, we are hopeful that one day we will definitely get to AAA, and then, you know, we will match those rates. But we need some time to get there, sir.
So, in how many years we will attain AAA?
Sir, right now we are AA-, and we are hopeful that with this capital raise that we have done recently, we should be able to get one notch improvement, that is move to AA. After that, you know, there will be AA+, which should probably take, it would take several years to get to a AA+. So, and then after that, we can look at a, I mean, a further increase.
Yes, sir. Sir, again, this government, as we maintain liquidity 2,700 crore, almost equal to 1 year AUM, why we maintain such a higher liquidity buffer when we have unavailed bank credit limit?
Sir, the 2,500 that you are seeing, it's not on the balance sheet. Out of that, 1,200 is on the balance sheet. The rest is on unavailed lines only.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Okay, okay, okay. Understand. And the 28.7 crore we write off this year, how much recovery of earlier year write off we received during the year?
Sir, it's you are looking at the credit card line, right?
Right.
Sir, it's not full write-off. The write-off portion of that number is about 17 crores. And the recovery that we've had is about 2 crores.
2 crores.
Yes,
sir. 15 crore is the net loss.
Net write-off. Yes, sir. Net write-off.
Yes, sir.
Okay, okay, okay. Thank you very much and carry on. Yes, sir.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Subrato Sarkar from Mount Infra Finance. Please go ahead. Sir, I would request you to unmute your line and speak, please. Due to no response from the current participant, we will move on to the next participant. The next question is from the line of Abhishek Jain from AlfAccurate Advisors Private Limited. Please go ahead.
Thanks for opportunity and congrats for a strong set of numbers. Sir, my first question on the industry growth in the affordable housing segment. So what is your expectation for FY26? And we have seen that many financial institutions are increasing their presence into this space. So how do you see competition over there?
As far as the overall market is concerned for FY26, we think it should be another year of good or a decent demand, because affordable housing demand has largely been secular. The growth has been secular in the range of 10 to 15% a year. So we are expecting a similar kind of a growth rate this year as well. As far as competition is concerned, you know, it has been again very, you know, very uniform across several years. Every year there are some new players entering this business. But at the same time, there are, you know, some of the larger entities who move up in terms of the ticket sizes and, you know, customer profile. So in some ways, they kind of, you know, exit this segment. So so it has been, you know, from a competition perspective, we expect it to be another year of similar competition. Nothing very different.
So what is your current market share in this space, and how do you see the market share going ahead?
The market share, if we look at it as a percentage of the overall affordable housing segment, we are at about 2% share of the market. And our ambition is to reach somewhere between 4 to 5% market share in the medium term. That is maybe in the 3 to 5 year kind of horizon.
Okay. And in terms of the ticket size, what kind of the growth you are looking in the coming years in average ticket size?
The average ticket size has been growing at about 3 to 4% every year, and we expect a similar kind of increase in the coming years. So every year maybe around 3 to 5% increase in ticket size.
Okay. And my last question on the delinquencies side. So are you seeing any increase in the delinquencies in a few states, and your courses. Would like to give some comment on that part.
No, broadly, at least last several quarters, we have seen most of the states moving together. That is, when there is increase, there is a increase across the board, and there is a decrease across the board. So largely, it is seasonal. We are not seeing anything specific to any market or any particular state or region where there is an increase or decrease for any reason.
Okay, sir. Thanks. That's all from me, sir.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Aditya Pal Singh from MSC Capital Partners. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you so much for the opportunity. Congratulations, Nutan and Manoj sir, for the great great performance. So, wanted to quickly understand that when we look at the branches which have a vintage of more than 2 years, what would be the profile of these branches in terms of AUM per branch, OPEX to AUM, ROAX, head office?
So 2+ years, generally the branches reach AUM of about between 30 to 50 crores. In terms of OPEX to assets, they would be, I mean, if the country is at 2.7%, I mean, these would be slightly higher than country because they still have not reached a kind of a mature level. So maybe around 3-4% of extra assets would be the broad range. I mean, these we would call these kind of just pre-mid-size. Mid-size would be around 50 to 70 crores of AUM. So pre-mid-size branches in the 2 year time frame. I mean, by the time they reach about 3 to 4 years, they reach the mid-size, which is about 50 to 75 crores.
Understood. And if you have the number handy with you, would you know vintage wise number of branches? Today we had total branches of 155. How many would be less than 1 year, 1 to 2 year, and then 2 to 3, and then 3 year plus?
Yeah. So not at such a granular level. I mean, we can give you that, but broadly. Yeah, broadly we categorize in 3 buckets. So there are smaller branches which are. Less than 25 crore, AUM. Then there are 25 to 75 crores, which would be the mid-sized branches, and 75 crore plus branches. So generally, the ratio is around 1/3 each. So you can say 50 to 60 branches in the smaller category, about 50 branches in the mid-sized, and about 50 branches in the larger category.
Understood. Another question was that now that we raised 1250 crores in QIP, many congratulations on that. Do we see our branch expansion, that is number of branches per year, increasing from what our status quo was 22 to 25 branches per year? And another question would be that our target of 35,000 crores in FY30, would we need an other fundraise in the interim before we reach that?
So branch expansion, the number of branches will increase in because of the base being higher. So we would like to expand at about 20-30% every year. The AUM is expanding at about 25-30% every year. The branches also will expand at the same pace. So, we were growing at about 20-25 branches every year. So that number will go up slightly, maybe to 30-35 or 35-40. As far as capital is concerned, we are good for about 4 years now. So maybe by 2030 is when we will need to look for fresh capital.
Understood. Just one last question. This was more to do with the thought process. When we see state-wise AUM per branch, so they are quite different. For example, there are states with 65 to 70 crores AUM per branch like your Maharashtra, Tamil Nadu. And then there are states which have an AUM per branch of 100 crore plus, like Gujarat, Karnataka, Telangana. Just trying to understand, is there any different strategies we are deploying in the state, or the states which have 100 crore AUM per branch, these are more high conviction states for Home First?
No, maybe, it will be largely to do with the vintage. So where we have started the branches a little earlier, the size would have become bigger. The AUM per branch would have become larger. So there would be newer states like, you know, MP, etc., where we started, we started the expansion over the last 2-3 years. So there you would have a lower AUM per branch.
Understood. But a state like Tamil Nadu also, or Maharashtra, which we've been there for a very long time, but they have a same, I would say, somewhat similar AUM per branch to or lower than Madhya Pradesh.
Yeah, because you know, if you see the, it will also go in line with the growth rate in that particular state, right? So some states are growing faster, some states are growing at a slower pace. So AUM per branch also would reflect that.
But there's no different strategy that we're deploying, that these states will have larger AUM per branches.
No, nothing of that sort. There's nothing of that sort. Our general position is that irrespective of where the branch is located, it should be able to run at about 200 crores per branch.
Last question was for Nutan. So Nutan, when I calculate the yield, I am getting 13.2% as my portfolio yield. This is including the co-lending piece.
So
is it a timing difference, that because we would have disbursed a lot in the back end of March?
Not back end of March, but when you look at a monthly disbursal, it will be about first half to second half about 40-60, maybe in some months 35-65, which will lead to dispersion that you just mentioned. But like you just mentioned, it is a timing difference.
Understood. That's it from my side. Thank you so much, and wishing the team all the very best.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Nupur Kota from Naridi Investments. Please go ahead.
Hi team. I have.
Sorry to interrupt, ma'am. I would request you to please use your handset.
Yeah. Hello. Am I audible?
Yes, ma'am.
So good evening, team. I have two questions. First one is, we could see a good AUM growth of 31% and interest income growth of 32%, but growth in profits is 25%. Further looking into this, I got to know that there was an increase in our overall interest cost by 43% year on year, despite our cost of borrowing rising only marginally to 8.4% vis-a-vis 8.2% last year. So can you throw some light on this increase in interest cost?
Right. So when you look at the fact sheet and you analyze the P&L, the total income has gone up by 31%, but the net interest income has gone up by 26%, which is broadly where the overall profit increase is also. So the cost of borrowing rise has been slightly higher. You are the question that you're asking is on year on year or quarter on quarter?
Year on year.
So when you look at the fact sheet, the interest expense has gone up by 43% because the cost of borrowing has, and the total income has gone up by 33%.
Exactly.
Yeah, so that is the most important reason.
Yeah, so what is the reason behind the rise in increased cost by 43%? Interest cost by 43%.
Okay. So the
cost, because our cost of borrowings is almost at the same level of 8.4%.
No, so if you look at year on year, it has gone up from 8.2 to 8.4. That is a 20 basis point increase on a sharply increasing growing borrowing book. So that is the contributor to the difference.
How much commission do we give to our connectors, and also do our connectors help in recoveries?
No, so commission we give about 40 to 50 basis points to connectors, and helping in recovery is more ad hoc. It is not part of their contract or part of their agreement with us.
Okay, all right. Thank you, and all the best.
Thank you. The next follow-up question is from the line of Anusha Raheja from Dalal & Broacha. Please go ahead.
Yeah. So in newer geographies that you have catered to, for example, in MP or UP, so how has been the asset quality performance in these newer states? How's the credit discipline?
Credit discipline has been fairly good. So in MP and Rajasthan, I mean, so if you see the three new states, four new states where we are present, MP, Rajasthan, Uttarakhand, UP, I would say in MP, Rajasthan and Uttarakhand, the performance has been better than what we expected, and UP is just what we expected.
Okay. And in Gujarat, which is a domain state, the growth is coming down in that state relatively on YOY basis. So is this because the other states are growing at a higher rate, or demand per se in that state is relatively lower, or you would choose to grow at lower rates there?
No, so we are still growing at about 21-22% in Gujarat. And so we have some plans to kind of re-energize, etc. So as I mentioned earlier in the call, there are some states where we are kind of restructuring, the teams, and we will come back more strongly. So there are some places where we are going by 20%, there are places where we are going by 30%, 40%. So there is a range. So there will always be that strategy of, going very strong in a particular state in a particular year, and in other states we are kind of regrouping or, consolidating.
Okay. And lastly, you said that co-lending model 2 is eliminated from the new RBI guidelines and co-lending model 1 is tedious. So in what way that is tedious?
So what I mentioned was they have actually omitted mention of co-lending model 2. So everybody is still wondering whether it is allowed or not allowed, and I think there is still discussions going on whether this will be allowed. So we are hoping that the co-lending model 2 will be allowed. But if it is not allowed, then yes, we have to go to co-lending model 1, which is a little more tedious. Why it is tedious is because as per co-lending model 1, the disbursal of the loan has to be done simultaneously by both the entities. So primarily that makes the process more tedious, because when the loan is onboarded, the 20% sits on our books and 80% will sit on the bank's books. And the disbursal also has to be then proportionately done by the respective entities. Currently, the disbursal is done by us and then it is paid back by the bank to us, so which is a easier model. But if that all disbursals have to be made simultaneously by the two entities, then it makes it more tedious.
Okay, and you follow co-lending model too, right?
Correct, we follow two.
Okay, sir.
Does that answer your question, ma'am?
Oh, it's largely answered. Thanks.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Devyansh Gupta from Layton Advisors. Please go ahead.
Hi. Couple of questions around the LAP book. So would you be able to break up our NPAs between LAP and home loans separately? Because last time we discussed, because the ECL is coming down because LAP is going up and we end up incurring a lesser loss there.
Yes.
So what would be the NPA trajectory for LAP versus home loan, and what would have been this number in FY24?
Yeah, so I can tell you the March 25 numbers right away. LAP is around 1.2-1.3% NPA and home loan is about 1.9. Actually, the numbers are disclosed in our QIP placement document and it is already published on the stock exchanges. So you will get the full detail with a three-year comparison there.
Got it. So I missed it, so I'll check back.
Okay.
But just typically LAP would have a higher NPA and home loan would have lower NPAs. But our numbers are a bit different from, let's say, the general expectations. So how should we read
it? The way we are reading it is because we have a lower proportion of LAP, our teams have the luxury of selecting better customers. And we don't have aggressive targets for LAP, so they have the luxury of selecting better customers for LAP, and which is the reason our NPAs are slightly lower, compared to the market as well as compared to our own other products.
Got it. And so when you say LAP, it is not a top up on a home loan, right? Because then you can get that advantage fee on a home loan. You are giving a top up and then it is considered LAP. So this is pure play LAP.
It's pure, new customer. These are new customers we are acquiring from the market.
Got it. Understood. And second question related to LAP. So our presentation shows that our LTV at origination less than 80% is going down, which can also be a factor because of LAP going up, right? Because LAP, I don't think you will do at 80% LTVs. So what would be our more than 80% LTV at origination for home loans business?
LAP forms a smaller proportion. So I would say, you know, because LAP is only 15% of the AUM. So to that extent, it should not impact the ratios too much.
Yeah, that's right.
So what do you think?
Does it mean that effectively LAP is also given at 80% LTV? That would be very, that way is a risky thing, no?
No, a LAP would not be given at 80% LTV. So LAP LTV will be generally, or rather in almost all cases, it will be less than 60%. So
right.
If you can ask the question again, because I,
So in our presentation,
LTV at origination, right? LTV at origination is what you're talking
about. LTV at origination, So if I look at the more than 80%, there has been consistently coming down, which makes sense if you're giving LAP loans because they will be at lower LTV.
Right. But you're talking about more than 80, correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
So more than 80 coming down is the explanation is that, you know, our basically, see the more than 80 LTV actually is in the apartment segment. Developer-led apartment segment. So our over the years, our exposure to apartment segment has been coming down because we are, we are doing more of self-construction, more of loan against, more of retail and other products compared to apartment products, compared to new apartments. So that is the reason for the marginal decrease in LTV, which is above 80%.
Understood. And the last on the LAP is that, if I look at the mix of self-employed and salaried and LAP and other LAP and home loan, it, would it be a fair statement to say that salaried LAP is going up?
Why do you say that? We don't have any such direction internally.
Deliberately, but just happening. Because if I see the self-employed mix, it is going down. Or LAP is going up and self-employed is largely similar at whatever range it was. It's not falling down. So then it implies that LAP would be taken up by self-salaried also.
Yes. LAP is taken by salaried also. We have, I think at the moment, we have an equal mix of salaried and self-employed as far as LAP is concerned, and that ratio has been largely constant across the years.
Got. So the question was that what would be the purpose? Is it loan consolidation?
Purpose is threefold. There are basically broadly three three purposes of LAP, why people take LAP. There are some customers, about 30% of the customers, who would have actually started their construction by borrowing from others and who would have kind of finished the construction. And then now they want to repay those loans. So that is one reason. So it's like a delayed housing loan. So that is one key reason for LAP. The other reasons are the normal traditional reasons where it is used for consumption or it is used for a business purpose.
Got it. Understood. The second question, so LAP questions are done. So the other one was that last time we mentioned that we studied Bajaj and Chola and we figured out that let's say we will come back to markets every 2 to 3 years to raise equity. Now in this call we said that we are going, this equity raise will suffice for us for at least 4 to 5 years.
Right.
So is there a change in thought process of the growth assumptions that let's say we had earlier versus now, or how should we read into that?
The change is in the amount of equity that we raised. So when we were on the call last time, the number that we had in mind was 1,000 crores and we had taken an enabling resolution for 1250 crores, but because of the response we actually ended up raising the full 1250 crores, which has added the additional year.
Understood. The next question was the digital partnership, sourcing through digital partnerships saw a big raise from 1 point something to 2.2. Is it a one-off? Is it some structural changes that we have done which is, let's say, which has taken this to this level? Or just trying to see if, how, is it a one-off or some structural changes that we have introduced?
It's not a one-off. It is, you know, we had, if you see, I think last couple of quarters back, we a new partnership was added, which is PhonePe.
Okay.
And so that is giving us a slightly increased number for the digital partnerships.
Got it. Understood. So I'm assuming, given the franchise that they have, we should. But is it a BT product or it's a fresh new home loan kind of loan?
No,
that
we don't do BT product. We only do new home loans. I mean, BT product is in is not a focus area for us. It is a very insignificant portion of our business. And in all these digital partnerships, also the focus is on new acquisition only.
Got it. Because for them, it becomes a very easier sell. Ki, sir, aapke paas home loan hai, we can give it at a cheaper one. That's
that
why.
So that is more of a strategy by some of the larger lenders. Because they have a cost of borrowing advantage and they can pass it on to the customer. We don't have that advantage, so we only focus on newer.
Understood. So two more questions. The 300 crores of net gain on DA.
Yes.
And if I look at our PPOP or even PBT, right? So around 20% of our profit is coming from this upfronting of DA sales. Which does not necessarily lead to profit being booked, right? 300 crores.
You mean 30 crores?
30 crores, but PBT met is still 20%, right? So the question was that if you can break this split into what was the net gain from fresh DA done and the earlier ones would have been some assumption change. So if you can just give a breakup of this.
Right. So the breakup largely is not more than 10%, which will be there from the old one. But I want to address the more important point of, you know, whether this is sustainable. See, the thing is that we are upfronting the income because it is a requirement. Now the question is, if I did not upfront it, and if I drew up my P&L and looked at the profit after tax or the net worth in the old IGAAP method, what would be the difference? Because, you know, either I can do IGAAP accounting or I can do Ind AS accounting. So on a net worth basis, because it is a timing difference at the end of the day, I am still going to recover the same amount of money from the customer and my spread is not going to change. So from a net worth basis, the difference is not more than 30-40 crores. From an annual profitability perspective, the difference is less than 10 crores. And it fluctuates depending on whether the assignment proportion to the AUM is increasing or decreasing. Because the gap is so narrow, we have chosen to kind of focus on more why DA needs to be done rather than, you know, the contribution to the income, because either it will come through the net gain line in Ind AS accounting or it will come through the interest income and expense line in IGAAP accounting.
But see, this quarter itself it was 30 crores and you said for the year it is around 10. Did I misunderstood something?
No, for the
because
year...
Because every year there is a net gain, right? So if I just cumulatively look at it, it would be a higher number.
No, so if I did not do a net gain, I have a DA book on which I would earn the spread.
Yeah.
So my DA book will
that
be...
That would have been 10 crores. That would have been 10 crores is what you are saying.
No, my DA book is about 1500 crores on which I would earn a 5% plus spread.
No, he's saying it would be done it that way, it would be 10 crores lesser than the total
profit
for this.
Profitability would be in the range of 7-10 crores difference, yes.
Got it. And what is the overlays that we are carrying in our ECL?
13 crores.
And what would be the write-off in this quarter and for the whole year?
I'll just tell you, give me a moment.
Whole year is 17 crores approximately. And
just the gross write-off, right? Net of, not net of recovery.
That's right.
This quarter, I think it's 4 or 5 crores. I'll just tell you in a moment.
Sure.
Yeah, about 5 crores.
Got it. Yeah, that's all that I had. Thank you and all the best.
Thank you.
The next question is from the line of Siraj Khan from Asian Capital Partners. Please go ahead.
Hello. Thank you for the opportunity and good set of numbers. I have two questions. One with respect to the data that is given in the fact sheet of the new to credit loan accounts. So in FY24 to 25, that has reduced. So this is by design or by default? I mean, are we actively going towards having credit information customers, or the number of customers in the new to credit segment are reducing? How is that?
Yeah, the number of customers in the new to credit segment are reducing. We are not actively seeking out customers with credit history. It's just that in the market, such customers are reducing because credit is easily available now.
Okay. And on similar lines, the self-employed AUM is constant. I mean, it's inched up very moderately. But what is the split that you see, say, FY26 or ahead?
Broadly in the same range only, 60, I think right now 68-32. One or two percentage points we can't say, but broadly 65-35 to 70-30 is the range that we see.
Understood. And what will be the incremental ticket size of loans? Because what I can also see is in the fact sheet is the proportion of the AUM in the 1.5 to 2 and 2 to 2.5 has jumped by 2 odd percent each. So is the incremental ticket size higher than, say, close to 18, 20 or above? 18 lakhs, 20 lakhs or above?
No, sorry, that's right.
No, so the growth zone for us is now 10 lakhs to 25 lakhs, right? So below 10 lakhs is not a very large growing segment. So there you will, between 10 lakhs to 25 lakhs, you will see larger, more growth.
Okay,
see,
but what would be the incremental?
Yeah,
incremental
so its size is 11.7 lakhs.
I think that is the average. What will be the incremental disbursements that would have happened in FY25?
13 lakhs.
13 to 14 lakhs.
And the final one on the promoter. So with the capital raise, each of their holdings has come down below 10%, 7% and 5%. And now Warburg remains the single largest holder at approximately 11%. So what will be their role going ahead? And how will there be any specific change in the management or anything of that sort with respect to the direction? That is a question.
No, there is no change. I mean, so, the promoters have largely functioned like public market shareholders over the last 3-4 years also since the time we listed. We do not anticipate any change as such as far as management or company functioning is concerned, because we have been led by the independent board all through these years. So no change anticipated.
So no specific change strategy or anything with respect to sourcing or anything of that sort?
No, absolutely not. Because like I said, we have been led by the independent board even over the last 4 to 5 years. So we don't expect any changes. So largely it has been management and independent board led strategy. The promoters, our large shareholders have not played a role in that. So nothing is expected to change.
Okay, thank you. And just a final one on the, state-wise asset quality. So we have seen good growth in Madhya Pradesh and in others, in some states of Karnataka and others. But what I want to know is, are you seeing any signs of early stress, maybe in the 30+ DPD or 1+ DPD, where, because it has been inching up, although it's been controlled, but it has been inching up year over year. So is there any specific state or any specific product or a customer type that is seeing any early signs of a warning? Because, say, for example, Madhya Pradesh has grown approximately 72% YOY, as per the fact sheet, but Tamil Nadu and other states have grown slightly lower. So is there a region-wise issue or some state-wise issue, anything of that sort?
No, the pace of growth is not directly linked to the, asset quality experience that we are facing in the state. It is more related to various other things like getting the right people, expansion of branches, and various other factors. So it is not, like I said earlier, most of the locations have a similar, similar profile as far as the credit behavior is concerned. We are not seeing any dramatically different behavior.
Understood. And just a clarification, the active current account that was shared earlier was?
3800
active connector accounts. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that was the last question for today. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Manoj Viswanathan for closing comments. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, everyone, for participating and engaging in the call. We hope that we have been able to answer the questions to your satisfaction. In case you want to reach out for further questions, you can always reach out to Deepak Khetan or write to us on investor.relations@homefirstindia.com. Thank you very much.
Thank you. On behalf of Home First Finance Company India Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your line.